This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not reflect those of other podcasts or affiliates of this show or Gunna Geek. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Get ready because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 153 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we feel it's best to hide from our arch nemesis. No, not that one. That's our best friend. In a medieval castle, and then rock out to our heart's content with the natives in some desperate attempt to hide from the shame of a battlefield decision that's really been kind of haunting us for 40 years, or a few weeks, you know, depending on your personal temporal alignment. My name is Keir, and joining me in the GPR studios on this glorious premiere day is Jay. Jay, how are you, sir?
I am spectacular. I had new Doctor Who to watch this week.
I think we all did. Fancy that. And over there is Haley. Haley, welcome back.
Good to be back. Where'd I go?
Well, you know, we were all kind of in stasis for a while. But what's on the docket, Jay? Tell us.
So this week, we finally get to discuss the first episode of Series 9, the Magician's Apprentice. So from Supreme Unit Operative Clara to a tank-mounted guitar solo, from Missy's twisted sanity appeal to Clara for help, to the one word a child could utter that could cause the Doctor to abandon him in a moment of mortal danger. Davros. I mean, we discussed the possibility of this happening, right? I mean, this is something that we talked about it last week, that this is a very real possibility. Did you guys see it coming?
Kind of.
Kind of, yes. But I don't think it took anything away from the execution of that intro, that opening sequence, because it was so disjointed. You know, you get that completely asynchronous chronological nightmare that is this thousand year Khalid war,
right? The biplanes with the lasers and the bow and arrows and
and even down to the costume choices, they're all kind of mishmash. You know, they're wearing goggles, but they have gas masks, but they have mesh gear and things of that sort too. And the whole thing just looked like this had been stretching on for an inordinately long amount of time, and is now at the point of desperation where they're using any available weaponry or defense, or both, you know, that they've been using for centuries. So really well executed there. But when you get to the moment where, you know, you're dealing with this child, I think by the time that exchange starts happening, I was so wrapped up with it, I completely put the whole Davros theory out of my head. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah, no, same thing with me. It was one of those things where, you know, I was curious as to what was going on, and I had that, you know, I'm like, I bet this is the Thal and Khalid War, because, I mean, it fits so well with, you know, Baker's description back in Genesis of Daleks. You know, I mean, you've got the complete mash of technologies and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it was so brilliantly executed that when he says Davros, I literally, like, my mouth opened. I'm like, what?
But Haley, how'd you take from this? I mean, we've given you like all the primers to hit most of the salient episodes that this sort of rests on. So
I very clearly remembered the introduction of the Daleks, because we just watched that, I don't know, a few weeks ago, right before we did our movies.
Right.
And I did not remember as clearly the introduction of Davros. So I did, as soon as they said, oh, this is Davros, I was like, oh yeah, that's the Khalid War. But I don't think I remembered all the stuff about Davros that we learned. Well, I learned recently.
And I guess I got a little bit muddled because obviously when you deal with, you know, I get so wrapped up in a lot of the storylines that Big Finish runs with, and they have some different kind of origin stories that you can choose to play with. But of course, you know, cleaning up their tracks as well as they do, they always make sure that to be careful of any continuity treading that mm-hmm. might happen. They sort of loop back on themselves and give the opportunity for the BBC to continue to go back and revisit these stories as they need. Which, and again, it's a two-parter, so the story's not done yet. We might have some timey-wimey cleanup yet to be done.
Right.
Yeah, you don't think they're going to leave Missy and Clara dead and the TARDIS exploded?
Well, because now he's got the motorcycle to go with his guitar. And...
Yeah. No.
Plus a tank.
I do. Which he left in, like, you know, 12th century England.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah, the archaeologists are going to have a field day with that one when it comes up.
Who was driving the tank?
Remote controlled. Haven't you ever watched MythBusters? Okay. Come on. The thing that I loved was the hand mines. I mean, we'd all seen them in the trailers and things like that, but I mean, severely creepy. Mm. And I think what really sold it was the look of terror when he realizes that, you know, the dude who gets sucked under, like when he recognizes it, there is that terror of like, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap.
And it was almost a cartoon-like kind of disappearance because he sees it, he looks up with the face of panic, and then gets sucked down. It's kind of like a Wile E. Coyote hovering in space for a second before gravity kicks in.
It could have very easily been that way, but I didn't see it that way. I thought it was much, much better executed.
It reminded me of the series Earth 2, if you ever saw that one, and you had the Terrans, who were the indigenous species that lived actually under the soil's surface, and they would pull people down into their, you know, their caves beneath the Earth's crust. Mm. But Tim Curry throwback, if anybody wants to watch.
All right.
So we've got, there's the real, well, we've got a lot of major things we need to deal with here, but this whole, the structure of what we've set up in the first part of this two episode series has to do with the Doctor dealing with this regretful decision. Mm. So help walk me through this just so I make sure that I've got this locked down. Because if you watch the prologues, and I say prologues plural because we got the little 2 minute
right.
Web released prologue that led us into Magician's Apprentice, which was released in the theaters, and then, as we called it, was released online the next day. So we're getting
the Doctor's
all of this
meditation.
Oh yes, sorry, meditation.
Yeah.
So the Doctor indicates that he's just out there looking for a bookshop,
mm-hmm.
like you do.
Yep.
Stumbles across a battlefield, like he does.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Discovers this war in progress. Finds this kid, gets this horrible realization of who this child is, chooses to leave him for dead, but he had already thrown him his screwdriver.
Right.
Okay. So, kid, you're on your own. I know who you are. I'm going to leave Chance to this because I'm not going to get involved in this potentially fixed point in time. I'm not really sure whether that sort of thing was going through his head. Mm-hmm. Davros grows up, becomes the right bastard that he is. You know, all of their exchange and interplay plays out with his previous iterations, okay, while present day, I'm using finger quotes here, present day 12th Doctor is off to the Sisters of Karn at this right. point, because he realizes he's done something that fills him with, racks him with so much guilt and so forth. He creates his confession dial, you know, he knows that all these things are going to be happening, and then the call comes that he's wanted at the deathbed, so to speak.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, so, I mean, that's basically, we've got the part where Colony Sarf shows up at Karn and delivers his message, and we see that the Doctor's actually there and hears it, and that's where it leads into the prologue, the exchange that we see between the Doctor and Ohila. So that's when he gives her the confession dial. That's when, you know, there's that whole exchange, and I went back and I watched it having seen this episode, and everything does fit. Everything makes much more sense. Like, the, you know, it's much less ambiguous when you know exactly who they're discussing.
Right.
Meaning the prologues make more sense, or whole...
The prologue.
Okay.
Because I know we'd talked about it last week, and it was, you know, we debated a little bit about what it could possibly mean.
Who he was talking about.
Yeah. So that's when we go into the Doctor's meditation. That's mm-hmm. where, you know, everything goes back, has the time, what is it, how many days have I been here? 3 hours. You know, and then the digging of the wells and
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very lighthearted little romp there for about 6 minutes or so,
yeah.
Which is really interesting because it's one of the only lighthearted aspects of this whole composite, which just has so much gravity to it. I'm wondering, do you think there may be any value to someone putting a fan edit together that actually puts those pieces back in? Or is it better having them out of the episode proper?
I mean, it leads into it so beautifully that it almost seems like it should fit in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can splice those things together easily, but I don't know whether it's something that should be done because it is such a different tone that it would be hard to get the sense of danger and terror from the battlefield if you had just watched the Doctor's meditation.
I don't know about you guys, but that's how I watched it. Both times that I watched the episode is I watched the prologue, then the meditation, then the episode. Just straight through like that.
Okay. What did you think about it? Do you think that it fit?
I liked that they were separate pieces, but they flowed together well. So I don't think... I like keeping them as distinct units that you pause for a moment between watching.
Okay.
But I did watch them all together.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah, but then obviously that leads directly into the battlefield scene and all that kind of thing. But
right, which is a violation of a number of his own personal principles as well as just the laws of time that all Time Lords have to convey. And that's the doubling back on your own timeline. Yes, I know he's done it a number of times, even though we keep saying he's not supposed to be doing it. But this was blatant.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of he leaves the room and then he comes in through the opposite door. I know I just left, but here, you know.
Well, and that's one of those things that is different. Like we've seen him do that a lot, that it's not so much doubling back on his own timeline. It's just, you know, pausing the show while you go and, you know, get yourself a snack and then come back. You know, I mean, look at when he met Martha, you know, he goes back to a time before he actually met her or whatever. And, you know, takes his tie off or whatever. And like, you know, he does that a lot where it's just, it seems different to us or it seems weird, like it's all happening at the same time. But, I mean, he flows through it easily. So it's, I don't think that this was so much a blatant disregard of like, oh, well, I'm already in the spot. It wasn't like Father's Day where he and Rose are in the same spot as they were previously, you know, at the same time kind of thing. It's he waited for himself to leave and then came back, like hit that spot again shortly thereafter.
Right. Okay. But then he's also about to, well, at least as far as we can tell from the cliffhanger, he is about to go right up against the entire killing of Hitler sort of metaphorical. Well, because we're left with a ton of questions. Do we want to just sit here and take apart the massive number of questions that this episode is leading us? Or do we want to wait on that and kind of look at some of the mechanics of the episode first?
No, let's go ahead and let's look at the story and everything like that first. So the questions that we're left with now.
All right. So we've got a dead Missy, a dead Clara, and a splodied TARDIS. Begin.
What did you guys think about the fact that they had... we've discussed that it's been going on, and for anyone that's not aware, the BBC on Friday before the episode aired confirmed that Jenna Coleman will be leaving during Series 9. So...
At this point, they can't kill her off to write her out of the show, because they've done that too many times.
I found it interesting that they announced that the day before this episode airs, and you're like, guys... Because I've actually had a couple people who had heard the announcement and sent me a text on Saturday, like, she's coming back, right? Like, was that it?
You asking me?
Yes, she's coming back. I put my quarter on it. We have not seen the last of Clara.
We've seen pictures of her in later episodes, so yeah.
She was just hanging out on set.
But that's going to take for some very careful orchestration because, you know, first we looked at it and said, well, you know, maybe it wasn't the same sort of, they weren't really blasted. They kind of zapped out of there before the blast happened. But
if it had just been Missy, I would say yes. But because it was Missy and Clara and the TARDIS, no. Mm-hmm.
Right. Not to mention the fact that, I mean, there were aspects take the actual impact of the Dalek disruptor beams themselves. They have that classic look of the body glows, you see the skeletal frame underneath, and then it dissolves into dust. Happened with both of them. When the TARDIS blows, it's not just a matter of some exterior, you know, fade to white thing. You actually see the TARDIS interior starting to glow and blow before, you know, all the fireworks. So they this isn't going to be a kind of a camera trick sort of a reveal, as far as I know. There's something more at play here.
Yeah, no, I really think that the Doctor is going to go back and he is going to alter time.
Yes. Like,
there's going to be a change. And whether that helps to create Davros, I don't know. Whether, you know, this might be a point where they just rewrite the character entirely and it turns out that, like, you know, someone else creates the Daleks. Like, you know, they're not going to get rid of the Daleks, but
right.
they could really mess with continuity here and you know, turn Davros into a pseudo ally or something and still keep the same kind of story behind the Daleks going.
Yeah. I think what they might do is have him double back a second time. So this time going back, he does kill Davros and that drastically changes the timeline. And it creates some situation where he's got to go back and change it again. And that's going to get us back to a similar timeline as what we had, but with some differences. So that we're going to have a different continuity than we've had for the last 50 years.
That's an interesting possibility, yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know.
So the Doctor never really kills Davros, but he carries the weight of knowing that he did.
That's going to have some long-standing repercussions through the season.
Yeah. I don't know. More than likely, what we're going to get is some kind of hand-wavy explanation that just, it's a fun ride and it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, a lot of the times, these Moffat two-parters that, you know, that have such a great setup really never can close right. So I think the Witch's Familiar might turn out to be a slightly less cohesive story, and we just have to take what we're given at that point,
or sort of look at it as the culmination or the set of the two rather than taking apart each individually. Yeah, I mean, I have the same kind of concern because almost everyone that I've spoken to, granted, I know there are other things written out there, but most of the people that I've spoken to and a lot of the feedback we received was really glowing about all of the aspects of the construct of this episode. You know, very carefully put together, very adeptly released as far as trailer material. I think it was, they did a good job of keeping a lot of things under wraps, you know, better than they have in the past. Mm-hmm. And just what they chose to convey through some of the, you know, whether it was the teasers, the trailers, the prologues and so forth, it was all done with a very careful hand. And that sets the bar pretty high because Moffat's taken a lot of flack for certain things in the past, but we even have feedback we were going to mention tonight where people have said, okay, all right, you know, by Moffat standards, this is probably one of his best, if not his best. And, you know, that's pretty high praise because people are saying, well, you know, I enjoyed this as an episode more than Blink or, you know, some of the others that normally get a pretty high rank. Well, think about it. No, and I wanted to...
It is a great episode, and don't get me wrong. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, really, the only complaints that I have are minor. Like I feel like the Doctor's intro went on just a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole scene with the, you know, the joking around and things like that, that could have been tightened up a little bit. But beyond that, like I feel like it was a solid episode. I feel like it was from start to finish, it had me engaged. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that this isn't a fantastic episode. I don't know if I'd say that, you know, it's absolutely Moffat's best, but,
See, I was thinking I would have, the Doctor rolling in on the tank, that could have been shortened up, but I wanted to see more of the Doctor and Missy playing off of each other, putting on a show for the medieval audience.
Yeah, their exchange is always great. I made this kind of, well, kind of an epiphany to me. You know, we've always talked before about how, you know, the Master's relationship with the Doctor is very Moriarty and Sherlock. But in where things are at the moment, and especially with everything that we got from Missy this time around, like her discussions with Clara over the confession dial and her the affront that she took to Clara actually attempting to touch it, you know, and that kind of
thing. That was great. The look on her face was just like disgust and like, why would you think it's for you? What the heck? Like,
it tells me that it's not just a Mycroft and Sherlock, or I'm sorry, a Moriarty and Sherlock kind of relationship. There's Mycroft in there too, because there is that, you know, Moriarty never really had that affection for Sherlock. There was respect, mm-hmm. you know, as a mutual intellect and as a chess partner. but there was never that sort of affection that Mycroft's relationship with his brother tends to have at times, you know, where they needle one another and they treat each other like, well, like punching bags verbally and intellectually, but they genuinely look out for each other's interests and they're there for each other as needed, even as they're at each other's throats. So that's
Magneto and Xavier.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll take that parallel. Sure. And it seemed so much stronger now because the doctor was at a point of desperation. You know, the shame is weighing on him, you know, this albatross around his neck and so forth. And Missy kind of getting that moment where, well, he reached out to me at his moment of mortality when he realizes his time is nearing an end. He gave this to me. And though I honor and feel some sort of a pride in the fact that he did so, I don't want this thing to open. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go keep this from happening as best I can. So it's an interesting dynamic that just got even more so. And that's why, if nothing else, even though I don't want to see Gomez's talent, you know, wasted for the rest of the season, I don't want that dynamic to go away yet. We've got places we need to go with that.
Oh yeah. No, it's, I want to see more of that. I mean, just the little bit between Missy and Clara, you know, having coffee, that was brilliant. You know, I mean, the play between them and things like that. And you know, no, I haven't gone good. Like,
yeah. I'm not turned good.
Yeah, they never let her go too far with that. She'd have her moments of kind of pensiveness or something bordering on affection. Not for Clara, of course. She's the puppy. but then she'd do something that just, you know, bananas, and there she is again, you know. And there's so much going on under the hood there. It's just incredible.
Yeah, and I like when she's got that kind of restrained performance, you know, when she's just sitting there with the coffee and not moving and, you know, casually counting all the snipers and things like that. That is just as much fun as the, you know, the little bursts of over the top, you know, singing while she's, you know, tied up in the cell or whatever. It's, mm-hmm. You know, you have to have those both sides of that for it to really work.
You realize she was testing the echo in there because the whole time she was scientifically trying to determine where they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's just brilliant. Oh, the fact that gravity has a coppery taste.
Yeah. It's a little green around the edges.
Yeah. Little notice. Are we setting ourselves up for a new screwdriver here? I just kind of wondered on that one.
That's one of the things I've been wondering is if we're getting that or if, God forbid, the doctor actually goes without a screwdriver for a bit.
Mm.
I mean, that hasn't happened since, Colin Baker? Well,
yeah. Hmm. And it's interesting because Baker's doctor never really had any tete-a-tete with the master. So it's interesting that Missy said there's something I've never seen before.
Exactly. Yeah. I did pick up on that one. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that this, if the, you know, if the marketers at BBC Worldwide wanted, you know, hey, you know what? We need a new toy. This is how we're going to do it. That, yeah, I can see that playing out that way.
Mm hmm. Cool. All right. Some of Haley's favorite stuff here. When we start getting into quotes, I know this is more of a kind of a Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. sort of thing. But yeah, particular lines that stood out, either you know, a redeeming moment, a yes moment, or a huh moment, or a I need to know more about that moment.
Can't just find the doctor and bleat. He'll go Scottish.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's funny because she's Scottish too. I don't know.
No, that was Clara that was saying
Clara
that,
said that.
Mm. Oh, right. Oh, sorry. Sorry. And we've had some people asking about this. The Jane Austen as the phenomenal kisser. Was that really necessary?
No.
I think the implication is clear. Clara made out with Jane Austen.
Yeah, okay. But what's the purpose in that? Like, why are we including that?
Because she's flirty and cute, and we need to know that she made out with Jane Austen. I don't understand what your question is.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Keep up.
Gotcha.
Most of what the doctor said in this episode was just golden. You know, he had so many lines that, you know, the one, you know, Davros created the Daleks, but who created Davros? You know, and mm-hmm. that's still a question that we have. It's not something that has been answered yet. You know,
right.
The implication obviously, you know, leans toward the doctor created him or whatever, but that we don't know that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. It could have been, you know, one of many straws on the camel's back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the, what do you call the mechanics of madness? It's one of those things that, you know, it could be, well, you got the nature and nurture, debate. You know, he was a product of a long standing civil war. You know, from a formative age where all of that continues to weigh on his mind. Yes, the doctor left him in that perilous position, so he was of absolutely no contribution to bringing out of that. But there's all sorts of other implications of things that have happened along his development as he continued to work as a young scientist within the military research ranks and so forth. I do think it was very deftly done the way Davros referred to all of our conversations.
Yeah,
you know, do you miss our conversations? And they pulled all of those moments from all those iconic episodes from, you know, particularly Genesis of the Daleks. Well, although we did have others, but even moments from Stolen Earth. I mean, just I'm really surprised that they decided to pull all these things. There was so much, and you marked on this. This was like an RTD hug.
Yeah.
From Moffat.
Well, I mean, especially in the Mandalorian, or however you pronounce it, I don't
Mandalorian?
Know.
Mandalorian?
Yeah.
Mandalorian.
Something like that. But I mean, if you look through there, I mean, obviously there was an Ood, there was a Hath. At one point, like at the bottom part of the screen, there's one of the Sycorax. You know, then we go to the Shadow Proclamation and the J'Doon, and it's just like, and even the use of the, you know, the news talking about the planes, like setting that whole story up, and that's a very RTD thing. Like, he always used to do that. So there was a lot in this that was just like, hey, you know what? This is where we came from. This is, let's just give credit where it's due.
And I think this is, we're starting to see, I mean, we saw examples of this in Time of the Doctor, Day of the Doctor, where Moffat starts to say, okay, it's time to start bringing new Whovians, some of the, you know, into the knowledge of the history and the legacy of the show. Mm-hmm. And it's also time to start giving credit to my immediate predecessor for what he's teed up for what I'm working with right now, rather than creating a lot of new villains or, you know, things of that sort. I'm going to start stitching, which for those of us that want to go get a full appreciation, that's a great tapestry to be able to enjoy. There's just that rewarding thing when you go, oh, I get, all right, there's the moment. You know, the doctor refers to your bow tie, long scarf. You
right.
know, you're like, oh, okay. The old, the new. It's great. And I hope that he does more of that. I hope that's kind of where he is right now as far as his creative direction. He wants to see this kind of woven together.
Well, and that's, you know, we've reached a point where the new series has been back long enough that it can start referring to itself. You know, it can do that and give the new Whovians a chance to get the feeling that all the classic Whovians have had for years. Because, you know, we've always gotten the tie-ins to the old stuff. I mean, hell, even in this episode, you know, when what's-her-name, you know, says the three possible versions of Atlantis. Yeah. And I lit up, I'm like, oh, and I started counting them off, you know? So, but now new Whovians are hitting a point where they can get that as well. And it makes for a much more cohesive, you know, fan base.
Mm-hmm. Oh, even down to the fact, and I'm sure you all noticed, because it also was something that the BBC or BBC America was very quick to do. The day after the airing, they made sure that they had Genesis the Daleks on multiple repetitions over the next 48 hours, so that some of these questions about, well, what are they referring to? When has he ever dealt with this decision before? And they even stitched it in with some additional material at the commercial breaks to kind of explain. You know, so we're not leaving you wondering here. For those of you who haven't caught up on it, this is what is where we're drawing this from. So they have this very carefully orchestrated, and I'm so glad to see that.
I kind of like the fact that they did that as opposed to what BBC One did, which was leading up to it. They kept showing Genesis of the Daleks. It's like, yeah, tipped your hand a little bit there, guys.
Oh, speaking of tipping hands, though, we've got something for the research fans that want to sit out there and run with it. And that was Missy's line about the, you know, Claire asked her, since when do you care about the doctor? Since always. Since, all right, and you get three options. Since right. The Cloister Wars. Since the night he stole the moon and the president's wife. Since he was a little girl. One of those was a lie. Can you guess which one? And then you see people racing to the internet. Diggity, 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 diggity.
Well, also, it's coming from Missy, so they could all be a lie.
Yeah, that's very valid. But I mean, come on, in the three of those, since the doctor was a little girl, probably seems like the most plausible out of them.
Two truths and a lie, Gallifrey edition.
It's, yeah, I love the dialogue in this episode was fantastic. Just, it was very carefully done the vast majority of the time. And and it all seemed to fit. The only time that I really felt like there was anything that didn't really fit was with Unit, because they seemed very like, you know, on their heels about the whole thing. Like normally it's, you know, it's Kate Stewart who's calling the shots and saying, no, this isn't how it is. Pay attention to what's going on. And here she was just kind of like, well, maybe it's this. And it fell to Clara to be the one to figure everything out. And
yeah, it felt a little clunky. Mm-hmm. Almost, because, right. You know, they've got
the school teacher's going to show up and make you think, oh, maybe this is a terrorist attack. Like, yeah. They haven't thought of that up to this point.
But the thing that I did notice, though, is Clara being in charge, this version of Clara worked. Like, I completely bought her, you know, getting the phone call from Unit, rushing down there and being, you know, a valuable member of the team. And it just seems in such stark contrast to, remember, Nightmare in Silver, where, mm-hmm. you know, she's given command of this army and we're all just kind of like, why?
Yeah, where are you pulling that from?
Yeah.
I think I would have been more accepting of it if she were meeting Kate on an equal level, but it seems like Kate dropped down below. She had none of the answers, she had none of the insights, she had none of the observations to say, doesn't this seem a little unusual to you? Mm-hmm. You know, it's Clara who's posing all the Socratic questions, causing Unit to answer them, thus come to their own conclusions, but she's teeing them up for all these things, and that just didn't feel quite right. I like the fact that she was take charge, and it did feel more fitting for her now where we know where her character is, but Kate needed to be right alongside her and say, good, all right, I'm glad to see you, you know, you're with the rest of us at the head of the class here. All right, let's go.
Yeah, have both of them back and forth figure it out instead of just Clara, you know, spout it out and Kate like, oh, okay, yes, that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. that didn't work.
Really, it should have been Kate that figured out all of the possible outcomes of, you know, with these planes floating about, and then have Clara there to be like, oh, I know who that is, and oh, I know where the doctor would go. That should have been Clara's role.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, like, a little more equal footing. Yeah.
I was okay with her knowing, like, being able to figure out where the doctor was. Like, that's something Clara would know and Unit wouldn't be able to figure out. Like, yeah. Because yeah. that's a personal thing. The rest of it, yeah, I really wish Kate had been the one to piece it together, or yeah. at least had a big part in it. But I don't know. Okay. But that's really my only complaint with the script. I mean, everything else seemed to fit so very well.
I did feel like we got a little bit more. We've had hints of this before, but we've always wondered, you know, is there anything residual from some of the other Clara iterations that are our current, you know, the solo Clara as we know her, does she retain any of that, or does she have any sort of, you know, residual? Does anything travel through the ether that gives her that? But in the fact that she had to get such a primer on Dalek history and knew nothing about Skaro,
yeah,
you know, tells me that everything from Asylum of the Daleks was a complete wash, and that was gone with the Soufflé Girl. So. I noted that, you know, on the, like, the second viewing or so. I was like, okay, all right, that's a closed book. You know, she does not venture into the other volumes.
Right. Yeah, that is nice to. The one part about that bugged me was the fact that the doctor seemed so amazed to be back on Skaro, even though he was there for Asylum of the Daleks.
Yeah, but this is the first time he's been there since he left Davros to die.
Still, I mean, it was like a bowel shaking kind of realization when he's there, Skaro.
I mean, the only thing that I can think to kind of explain that is when he was there, it was a ruin, you know, it was overgrown with jungles and things like that. And here we had, you know, we had a city. So maybe it was the realization of, oh, you guys have come back and rebuilt the world, taken it back from the you know, the vegetation and things like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was what it was supposed to be, but if that's the case, it did not portray it very well at all.
Right. Hmm. Again, I think that's going to be another thing, a very quick brush off, same as Missy's return, you know, the explanation for yes. her return. You're going to get a crack line and just run with it. Just, you know, no need to explain it. I'm the freaking master.
Exactly. And at this point, we have hit that line where it seems so funny because, you know, we all seem so hung up on it. Like, we want to know why she came back. We want to know how. And after hearing that line, I'm like, nope, that fits. That works. I don't need anything else.
Yeah. or any explanation you'd ever get from her, you know, you can't trust anyway. So go with go with the Occam's razor on that one.
Yeah, but I loved the line from her though when the doctor's talking about Davros and refers to him as my arch enemy, and she's like, "Hold on now, Davros is your arch enemy."
But closes that out with, "Ooh, I'll scratch his eye out, his eye."
Yes, his eye. <That's good.
laughs> She had such great lines in this one. They are just, you know, when Moffat's writing to her and gets to put some of that dark comedy in, again, that's one of his strong suits. He's good with whipcrack dialogue. So, and he's got a talent there in Gomez that can just devour it. So keep going.
I know. I really like watching her and PCAPS play off of each other.
Yeah.
You wanted that, King's Court sort of scene to go out for a long time.
For just the rest of the series, really.
I'm almost to the point where I would say that I would love to see Missy join on as like the second companion, just for like a short stint or something. Like that could be a lot of fun.
And then River shows up for a little while. Oh, it'll be the best.
Now, one thing that I do want to see, and it's, I don't know if we're going to, but I wouldn't mind Missy having her own TARDIS. Like, giving her the Vortex Manipulator so that she can get around and stuff is great, but I liked it when the Master had his own TARDIS, and I think that it could be a lot of fun to have that dynamic back.
I don't think that's ruled out. I mean, to reference the fact that she has one, had one, did it blow up? We don't know, because we don't know exactly where it was, technically.
Yeah. I tend to think that would be a little bit too hard for new fans to understand and appreciate, you know, because this week it's a horse-drawn carriage, this week it's a, you know, a column, it's,
I don't know, just a quick explanation of the fact that she's got a TARDIS as well. Hers is fully functional, so it can chameleon itself as mine can't. Why haven't you fixed yours? I like it as it is, you
know? Yeah, maybe
brush it off with a quick line.
Very he put possible. All his time into the squidgy console.
No, that if the TARDIS did explode, that's the first thing to go. That's a fire hazard.
Bring it back without the squidgy console.
We saved everything but the squidgy console.
Oh, man. Well, do we have anything else to talk about this week? Or I think we've...
One last thing. At the very end, he says, "I'm going to save my friend." Not friends, friend, singular.
Ah.
Interesting. Okay. I think I heard that, but then I didn't really give it much credit, but I don't know.
It's a British phrasing, like the team are loving it, you know.
Oh, okay.
It's an implied plural.
Gallifrey Public Radio would like to apologize to all of our British listeners. We're just a bunch of dumb Americans.
America.
Our audience are forgivable.
Oh, all right. You guys ready for some news?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this seems like it could very easily turn into the reason for our first news story.
You think?
The TARDIS is changing.
Woo! Woot!
Yeah. Now, look at the release date on this particular BBC article that they released, where they were talking about the fact that they gave a little bit of, gave Capaldi a little bit of input. Some aspects of what he wants. He goes, "Oh, well, you know, I always love the round things. Let's get the round things back in there." The round things. And there's some of those, you know, he had already introduced some more bookshelves, chalkboards. He's big on the chalkboards, that kind of thing. But we're also dealing with like some, did you notice there was like the, a lot of kind of timeless scientific claptrap around, what is it? A phrenology, which is the study of the bumps in the head. There's one of those heads kind of floating around somewhere and some other stuff. But why is the TARDIS interior changing, even if ever so slightly? Why?
I don't know.
Because it got bloated upied?
That's a very good possibility. So, it seems like it would be a reasonable time to do that. You know, the TARDIS got blown up. Oh, look, we got it back. Well, it's a little bit different now, but
it was just a flesh wound.
Yeah. I do like the fact that now, as they change the TARDIS, it's more of like an organic change. It's not a, oh, look, it's completely revamped. It's like, no, it's all still mostly the same. It's just, you know, we changed aspects of it instead of completely new control room.
One of the elements that I really enjoy. And it's interesting that when they released this, they interspersed. There's a video clip out there for those of you who want to follow the link from the show notes and things. And it's actually, a lot of it is Capaldi himself explaining, you know, my new interior and how proud he is of it. He wanted to see return of some of the really practical kind of analog controls on the console, but not steampunky kind of 10th Doctor style. He wanted to go back to the simple, you know, push this button, you know, 1960s mm-hmm. NASA, you know, computer terminal kind of things, because that's what he enjoys. He's got so many of those classic elements to what he brings to the Doctor. He wants his TARDIS interior to reflect that. So I think that's a cool transition, which means maybe there is no more squishy console.
Maybe. That would be nice.
I'm sure he must have, the day they brought that onto the set, and he walked on to start going through his dailies, and he looks down and he goes, what is this? No, no, no. And they had to convince him.
No.
Storming out to his trailer, no, no, no.
And they got I'm not putting my fingers in it.
That's disgusting.
Right, that's why we got Clara actually doing it, because he just flat out refused. So, all right, but the next news story that we've got, like we mentioned before, The Doctor's Meditation is available to watch online. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet, it is a lot of fun, and it leads brilliantly into the episode, so it's well worth going to check that out.
Yep, as well as the two-minute little prologue. That's on YouTube proper. Doctor's Meditation, you have to go through a couple of the various fan sites that have been out there to pick it up presently.
Yeah. So, for anyone that was wondering, Peter Capaldi was actually playing the guitar. I mean,
mostly.
Well,
yeah. I'm going to stick to this because it bugs me. Because I watch instrument continuity, and I know, yes, there's times when they have to, you know, get him facing a different direction, so they'll let the audio continue to run through, and he's fingering something different on the fretboard. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But one of the first riffs when the tank first comes through the smoke is Eddie Van Halen. Then it hands over to about, you know, 2 minutes of Capaldi's own noodling right. on that weird guitar that they found for him.
Yeah, but I mean, it just makes sense. If you have someone that's, you know, that can play the game like, or play the guitar like Capaldi, just let him play it. It's fun. You know, I really enjoyed, I enjoyed seeing him because he really did seem like he was having so much fun with that. Yeah, so.
Definitely. And it's interesting, you know, the little drop-ins of extra bits, you know, him sort of, you know, riffing on the wah, 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 or what have you as needed.
When he started playing Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. Now, the question becomes, is he playing that for Clara? Is he playing it for Missy? Is he leaving it, you know, vague?
Yeah. That and when he started playing, you know, Hey Missy, You're So Fine. Like, those were fun. I mean, those were fun moments that you knew. I don't even know if they were in the script. I bet Capaldi just started doing that just because he had a guitar in his hand, so why not?
Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't you if you could?
But it's all for naught. It's all for naught because we're going to be packing this show away.
Yeah, no, it's right. Absolutely over. It's done.
It's garbage.
The viewing figures for the overnights, if you remember back to back to Deep Breath last year, the overnights were 6.8 million for Capaldi's debut as the Doctor. Well, this time we got a measly, a laughable, a tiny minuscule 4.6 million. So clearly the show is in the tank. Just flush it and let's move on.
Yep. Dump all the rest of the episodes onto the internet. People can watch them when they will.
Mm-hmm. Just sell them to Netflix or something.
Yeah. No, the show's over. It's done. I find that. I mean, yes, that's a significant drop. I'm not gonna say anything about that. But the doomsayers that are grabbing onto this, and it's just last year was an event. I mean, it was a new doctor. It was a new, like, so much was changing, and it was a major thing. You had the theatrical presentations of it and things like that. They made it a much bigger deal. Mm-hmm. This year, you know, it was, you know, we had the same doctor, the same companion. There really wasn't anything to hype up aside from the return of the show. So I can understand if people weren't sitting there, if they didn't set aside time on their Saturdays to watch it this time. I bet when we get the, you know, the Live Plus 7 figures, I'll bet it'll be comparable. it's just the fact that it's the same day viewing figures that have dropped so much that people are just like, oh my God, it's over.
That's true. Well, there may also have been just a lot of very casual fans who checked in at the debut last year because they wanted to see how Capaldi would do with the role, even if they're not necessarily Who watchers. So that might have padded the numbers ever so slightly the year prior.
Right.
But again, I mean, this goes back to something we talked about as we were going through Series 8 last year. I don't care. You know, and it's interesting that the BBC News' own article about this, where they're reporting about the drop in numbers, you know, with the doomsday headlines, you know, Doctor Who sees millions desert the opening episode of our own show. Sorry. Yeah. But it goes along with the fact that within sentences later, within the same article, they start talking about the fact it got glowing reviews across the board. So what does it really matter as long as the show stays, you know, stays vibrant and we're getting great story? Mm-hmm. You know, if some of the numbers off the edges drop off because some people just don't seem to click with Capaldi for whatever reason, I know they're out there. I'm still friends with the folks who choose not to. It's okay.
You're still wrong and a horrible human being, but it's okay.
But you know, I respect your descent into hell. But it's all right. But as long as there's nothing really, you know, putting the show in danger, then I'm not going to lose a moment's sleep over, you know, dips in numbers.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing is if you look at it, this is a far better episode than Deep Breath. Like, I mean, Deep Breath was a good episode. Don't get me wrong, but this one it seemed much fuller and much better put together. And I much prefer this one. I think this is the far superior episode. So you know what? I'll take the hit in the numbers. Just keep giving me decent shows.
I wonder how many people, knowing this was going to be a two-part episode, were waiting to watch them together.
That's a very real possibility because, I mean, we do live in the instant gratification, the Netflix era. You know, I want to watch everything and I want to watch it, you know, I want to watch it all now.
But it's true. Well, we have listeners that come to us and say that you know, would keep in touch with us over the course of the last year. And then over the break, we're saying, okay, I finally just bought, you know, Series 8 on iTunes and I'm watching now. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to listen to all of you guys' discussions on these episodes now that it's all over. Yeah, okay, that's the way they do it. They want chunks.
Mm-hmm.
So be it.
So, yeah. But, I mean, like I said, I bet these numbers will wind up coming up, you know, with the Live Plus 7 numbers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not the event that it was last year, so.
Right.
It's okay. It was an event in my house.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Got to teach my niece what regeneration was all about, because all she's been exposed to is Tenet on Disney XD.
Nice.
So we gave her some of the primer set, you know, gave her 11th Hour and a couple of other episodes and kind of, you know, gave her a crash course literally hours before the premiere aired. Sat her down and watched it, and she got through the whole thing. And I said, so what do you think of the 12th Doctor? And she goes, He's kind of rough. I mean, what do you mean rough, like the actor's not? She's like, no, he's just like rough to people. This is a 13-year-old assessment of the thing. Okay, let's go with it.
Oh, yeah.
He's having a rough time of it, you know. Just watched friends die, his ship blown up.
Then the last news article that we've got to talk about here, for anyone that, you know, enjoys cosplaying and wants slightly personalized, you like to personalize your costume, well, there is a tutorial, basically a custom built sonic screwdriver.
Well, it gives you some of the basics of if you want one that's a little bit more than just kind of the plastic replicas that are sanctioned and sold. You can follow a couple of rough guidelines from the DIY prop shop that can tell you how you can use some simple elements to construct your own, you know, to fabricate your own. Requires you know, a little bit of assembly, a little bit of engineering talent, but it's not so complex that you're going to have to, you know, contract somebody to assemble one of these for you. And it's limited only by the supplies you choose to access, from the, you know, taking apart LED flashlights and things of that sort, or doing a little bit of simple soldering and such. But, you know, the more practical you want it, well, practical, it's fine. You're not going to be, you know, holding up stone doors a la Rings of Akaten. Sorry. But, you know, other things that sonic screwdrivers clearly can't do. I'm just going to keep digging it. I don't care. but it allows you to do some customization. I have always wanted to go back and get a replica of Troughton's, you know, the original one that that is really very simple in its construct, but the BBC has never decided to do any plastic replicas of it. They chose to start from Pertwee's and go up from there. But yeah, it's kind of a cool thing to see taken apart. So give it a view. I mean, it's a YouTube video that you can watch to go along with it, and they were saying that, you know, based on build price, you know, the amount of effort on the one that's demonstrated, when McLean, who's your host through this thing, Dustin McLean, puts this thing together, it costs him about $12 worth of materials, and he ends up with one that looks kind of like a pretty passable 10th screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's missing kind of like some of the crackle effect on the barrel in the paint, but that's a quick fix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it looks a good bit more solid than the one that I've got, which, you know, I bought the official license.
It wobbles a little when you extend it.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this for the people that enjoy making their costumes and building things and, you know, feeling like they had a hand in crafting it, this would absolutely be a brilliant time to spend, or way to spend your time. And I wish I had the time and the know-how to do this kind of thing, because it looks like it could be fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I want?
What's that?
Clara's jacket.
Oh, her new awesome unit commander jacket that she's sporting. Yes. Now?
I like it. I need one.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Unit command position not included.
I'll start my own unit. Blackjack and hookers.
All right. Well, this has been episode 153 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, okay, cutting to the chase. Not dead, back, big surprise, never mind.
This is Scare saying, do you know what this podcast is? It's pants.
And this is Haley saying, exterminate.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Hello-Z.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.